But if the volume that lies on St. Jerome's desk is, in reality, the book par excellence, or the archetypal book, what is it that St. Jerome is translating? In what sense can he be said to translate at all? According to Christian tradition, which in this case is based on the facts of history, St. Jerome is translating the Bible, and on this level, there is no difficulty. St. Jerome is translating the Hebrew of the Old Testament and the Greek of the New Testament into the Latin of what came to be known as the Vulgate. But if the Bible means the book, and if the book symbolizes knowledge, what is it that St. Jerome translates? Well, in what sense does he translate? In other words, how does one translate knowledge? What does one translate it into? Obviously, knowledge can be translated only into knowledge, just as one language can be translated only into another language. So that if knowledge is to be translated, there must be another knowledge for it to be translated into. Just as if a language, i.e. a text in one language, is to be translated, there must be another language for it to be translated into. Thus, translation implies plurality, whether of languages or of knowledges. And to speak of translating knowledge is therefore to speak of different kinds of knowledge. These kinds can be differentiated either horizontally or vertically. Differentiated horizontally, knowledge is either conceptual or symbolic, i.e. either a knowledge of concepts or a knowledge of symbols or images. Differentiated vertically, it consists of a knowledge of sense objects, a knowledge of ideas or mental objects, a knowledge of archetypes, and a knowledge of ultimate spiritual realities. Knowledge of the highest kind is identical with its object. From all this it is clear that knowledge is translated either from one mode to another, as when what was expressed in terms of symbols and images is expressed in terms of concepts, or vice versa, or when it is translated from one degree to another, as when knowledge of ultimate spiritual realities is translated into knowledge of archetypes, or knowledge of archetypes into knowledge of ideas or mental objects. Since the Bible on St. Jerome's desk is the book par excellence, it follows that the knowledge which it symbolizes will be knowledge par excellence, i.e. knowledge of ultimate spiritual realities. Thus, St. Jerome is translating in the sense that he is translating knowledge of ultimate spiritual realities into knowledge of the archetypes, and knowledge of the archetypes into knowledge of ideas or mental objects, so that those who have risen no higher than the level of ideas or mental objects will be given at least some intimation of the existence of those archetypes and those ultimate spiritual realities and be inspired to orient themselves accordingly. To be a translator in this sense is to be more than a translator. It is to be an interpreter of one degree of knowledge or one level of reality to another. It is to be even a mediator between different planes of existence or different worlds. A parallel to the figure of St. Jerome as translator in this more exalted sense is to be found within the Buddhist tradition in the slightly earlier figure of the great sage Nagarjuna, the second founder of Buddhism, who, after retrieving the Perfection of Wisdom Sutra from the kingdom of the Nagas, where the Buddha had deposited it, not only propagated it far and wide, but also expounded its teaching in numerous works of his own, thus inaugurating a new era in the history of Buddhism. According to Buddhist tradition, the kingdom of the Nagas is situated in the depths of the ocean, and Tibetan Buddhist art loves to depict the saffron-robed figure of Nagarjuna wearing the pointed cap of a master of the Tripitaka, or the collections of Buddhist scriptures, seated on a raft in mid-ocean, and receiving the massive Indo-Tibetan type volume of the Perfection of Wisdom Sutra from the hands of the mermaid-like Naga princess, who has brought it up to him from the palace of the Naga king, where it had lain concealed for more than 1,000 years. According to modern historical research, more than 500 years. Since the ocean symbolizes deeper levels of knowledge, what is seen externally as higher is seen internally as deeper, the kingdom of the Nagas symbolizes the realm of ultimate spiritual realities, and the significance of Nagarjuna's achievement consists in the fact that he has made the knowledge of those realities accessible to ordinary human consciousness by translating it into knowledge of ideas or mental objects, at least to the extent that the limitations of that kind of knowledge permit. Thus, Nagarjuna is an interpreter of one degree of knowledge or one level of reality to another. He is a mediator between the plane or world of the Nagas and the human plane or world, or between the world of the Buddhas and the world of ordinary, unenlightened men and women. He is a human as distinct from an archetypal bodhisattva, mysteriously hovering between the transcendental and the mundane. Besides providing a parallel to the figure of St. Jerome, the more remote and legendary figure of Nagarjuna, as the retriever and propagator of the Perfection of Wisdom Sutra, enables us to appreciate, perhaps more deeply than would otherwise have been possible, the significance of the image of St. Jerome as the translator, not simply of the Bible in the traditional Christian sense, but as the translator or the interpreter of one degree of knowledge or one level of reality into another. There are, of course, within the Buddhist tradition, other parallels to the figure of St. Jerome as translator in the more exalted sense with which we are at present concerned. There is the figure of Kumarajiva, who was almost the exact contemporary of St. Jerome, and the figure of Yuan Chuang, who lived about 200 years later, both of whom, in addition to translating Buddhist scriptures from Sanskrit into Chinese, explained them in Chinese for the benefit of Chinese audiences. To the best of my knowledge, the figure of Yuan Chuang in his study, after his return from India, is not depicted by the artists of the Tang and Sung dynasties with nearly the same frequency that the image of St. Jerome in his study, after his retirement from Rome to Bethlehem, is depicted by the artists of the Italian Renaissance. I did, however, once see a block print, I think it was, of Yuan Chuang seated cross-legged behind a low desk, across which lies a long scroll on which, with brush poised and a thoughtful expression on his face, he is inscribing row after vertical row of Chinese characters, presumably the text of one of the sutras he has translated. Paintings of Yuan Chuang on his way back to China are fortunately more common. One of the best of them depicts the great translator in the guise of a pilgrim, with robes girt to the knees and a staff in his hand. His whole body is bent forward, partly because of the weight of all the books and images he is carrying on his back, and partly because of his eagerness to complete his journey. Neither the block print of Yuan Chuang in his study, nor even the best of the paintings of Yuan Chuang as pilgrim, give us, however, any reason to suppose that the artists of the Tang and Sung dynasties ever saw in either of these figures anything that would have enabled them to transcend the facts of the immediate historical situation and to transform the figure of Yuan Chuang into an image of universal significance. Whether they ever saw anything in any of the other famous figures in Chinese Buddhist history that would have enabled them to transform them in this way, by concentrating on one crucial and representative episode in their career, it would be interesting to inquire.